legal cannabis is projected to generate so much money for the state of California, its treasurer is asking for a fleet of armored cars to pick up the money and carry it up to Sacramento. So we ask, where is the money in the legalization of cannabis?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1127th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Sasebo who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, wherever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I'm Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Jason Struby on the boards. Jason, is our pre-flight check complete?
We are locked and loaded, ready to fly.
Ready to fly. Producer Sarah Bell Lynn, flight plan filed?
Filed and ready to hit up the Golden Triangle.
Okay, here we go, folks. In a few short weeks, cannabis will become legal, sort of, in the state of California. This legalization is expected to generate so much cash, State Treasurer John Cheung is asking for a fleet of armored cars to pick up the money and take it up there to Sacramento. Cheung is not the only one who is infused with dreams of cannabis riches. In fact, an entirely new cannabis industry has sprung to life in anticipation of those riches. All that anticipation leads us to ask, where is the money in cannabis? Well, will the money be in the cultivation of the cannabis? For decades, illicit cannabis has provided the economic food chain by which people living up there in California's famed Emerald Triangle have survived. Will the money in legalization go to those small farmers in the Emerald Triangle? Or will it go to industrial growers with thousands of acres growing under the sun in California's Great Central Valley? Will the money be in the processing of cannabis into the thousands of products for which benefit might be derived? You know, since 1937, the processing of cannabis has been restricted to the concentration of the plant into hash and hash oil. But with legalization, thousands of different products might be made. Will the money in cannabis legalization be in the manufacturing and distribution of those cannabis products? Or will the money be in taxes? Like many states, California has been spending way beyond its means and has accrued a mountain of unfunded liabilities. Consequently, the state and its counties and cities will all be taxing the cannabis food chain to the maximum extent possible. Will the money go to the state and local governments? And if so, will that not make the state of California governments the world's largest cannabis syndicate? Well, here to help us find the money in California's green gold rush, we have two of the state's leading cannabis entrepreneurs. We'll start with John Downs, who is the business development director at the ArcView Group. John, welcome to the Food Chain.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Michael. Pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you aboard. Well, the ArcView Group, who are you?
Well, we're the country's first and largest angel investment network dedicated exclusively to the cannabis industry. We were founded in 2011, and we have about 600-plus accredited angel investor members. We've placed over $150 million, our members have, into the industry since 2011, and invested in over 170 individual early-stage cannabis companies.
Wow. There are a lot of people anticipating this green gold rush, aren't there? If you could find that many people, accredited investors ready to invest, they're ready to roll.
And we're just a small drop in the bucket of overall investor interest in this industry. It really is not so much, needs to be proven whether or not there's a demand for cannabis. We know it's there. It's more of a migration than a formation of a brand new market.
Right. So that's kind of where we're going today. We're going to migrate it a little bit, I think. Also with us today, we have Gavin Kogan, who is returning guest to the Food Chain Radio program. Gavin is with Grupa Flor. Gavin, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
Grupa Flor, tell us a little bit about your organization. Grupa means group. Flor means...
Yeah, it's actually Grupo. Mm-hmm. And it's Grupo Flor is a essentially a family of...
Is that a parrot, or is it...
I'm in Vegas for the big, ARQ Investor Forum here over the next couple of days, and then also MJ Business Daily, so I'm going to just mute when I'm not speaking, but I apologize. I had to take this call out by the pool at the Wind.
Okay.
After well, that, this morning, so.
So when we hear your talk, we'll hear you out by the pool next to the parrot.
Somebody's got to do the hard work, Mo.
Okay, good for you. Now, a group of what?
No, it's Spanish. It's Grupo Flor, which just means flower group in Spanish.
Okay, good.
And essentially, it's a family of companies that comprise the entire supply chain from, it started out as a leasing company, and then it ended up developing, subsidiaries or affiliates rather in, cultivation, manufacturing, wholesale distribution and retail.
Good. And you leasing what? We'll start there.
So the company started really in 2015 leasing properties in Monterey County, which, as I talked about in the last time we were on our show, Monterey County had suffers a lot of rotting, deteriorating greenhouses as a result of the cut flower industry migrating to South America. And so the county supervisors said, if we're going to allow cannabis in Monterey County, which is a large ag producer, then we want it to be in these old dilapidated greenhouses. So what Grupo Flor did was acquire leaseholds, most of them 20-year leaseholds, to we approximately have 2.7 million square feet of properties throughout Monterey County and its municipalities that are greenhouses, indoor facilities, manufacturing facilities, retail establishments, and so forth. And so they are all in permittable zones throughout the entire supply chain.
Well, I guess that would address the notion of migrating an industry then, because an industry being migrating into the cut flower industry, kind of.
Well, and my background as a cannabis attorney, this is something that we do in this industry, whether it's in the law or whether we do it as entrepreneurs, is we essentially graft existing structures that already work in traditional industry and pull them into the cannabis world and then manipulate them so that they work for the cannabis supply chain. And that's this is really no different. The richness that we have in Monterey County is we have this tremendous climate. We're centrally located between the two largest population centers in the state, and we have this vast ag infrastructure, and by that I mean not just land and equipment and know-how, but also the lawyers who know how to set up agricultural companies and the accountants who know how to work with agricultural companies and the tradesmen and on and on and on. So it's really already well built out for that. But I do want to say that I'm not aware, at least in my area, of any vast tracts of land dedicated to cannabis under one operator. They're still really small operators, and I think it's important to understand that for the most part, 99.9% of all the operators in our industry are small mom-and-pop shops. They're not these massive ag plays that people have in their minds, particularly up in the North Coast when they think about what's happening in Monterey County and get nervous about this shift in the economic production.
Okay. We'll explore that as we move along, but one question I want to open up with today, and it's kind of a puzzle to me. State Treasurer John Chang came out this week and suggested, there's going to be so much cash in this industry. We need to get a fleet of state-owned armored cars to pick it all up and take it to Sacramento. Why would he do that when it's legal? Why don't you just put the money in the bank and the bank sends a wire to Sacramento and everybody's happy? John, start with you.
Well, because cannabis is on the Controlled Substances Act as a Schedule I substance, and so banks are, very reticent to participate in the industry because they draw additional regulatory scrutiny for doing so. And so it's not that they couldn't, and certainly some banks are, but in doing so, the banks really do open themselves up to additional oversight, and it's a risk not worth taking for many of the banks that are out there. And so what we found is, just like, I guess, back in the olden days, you have a relationship with, say, with your cannabis dealer, and if it's really good and strong, you protect that. And it's similar to what we see today with cannabis companies when they've been able to establish a banking relationship. good luck trying to get them to open their mouth and say who their banker is and who they're working with, because they have to be very careful about protecting the nature of that relationship for fear of again, once it gets out or once they draw any additional scrutiny from the bank, then they can often see that shut down. And so what you have is a very few, you know, haves that have banking, but most of the industry is banking in cash. And therein lies the nature of John Chang's request for a fleet of armored cars.
Gavin Cogan reminds me of the Wells Fargo Bank commercials with the stagecoach riding along in the through the dust and the big safety box up on top and the rider riding shotgun. Pretty close there. Folks, we're going to have to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to look for the money in the legalization of cannabis with two of California's top cannabis entrepreneurs and you, John Downs and Gavin Cogan, and you. 831-479-1980. Right back.
You can dream it, build it, own it, Metro farm it. You can sow it, feed it, grow it, Metro farm it. Ah, you can harvest it and dry it. You can sell it. Metro farm it.
Learn how to dream it, build it, sow it, seed it, grow it, harvest it, sell it. Metro farm it. Yes, you can do it. Dream it, build it, earn it, own it. Metro farm it.
Oh, learn it, do it, earn it. Metro farm it. Dream it, build it, own it. It's easy, you can do it. Metro farm it.
It's all in Metro Farm, the guide to growing for the city. Get your copy today at metrofarm.com.
It's easy, you can do it. Metro farm it. And now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
We are back with some What's Eating What. Michael Olson here, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio and the Food Chain. You know, before we took the break, I pitched this notion to Gavin Cogan, who is with Group of Floor, about the notion that we have an economy based on the rule of law, and yet here we are, we have the state of California setting up a armored car system to pick up cash and take it up to Sacramento. Reminds me of the old westerns when the Wells Fargo stagecoach would, you know, take the miner's gold and put it on a strong box, and the way the stagecoach would go with the armed guard up on top. Any difference, Gavin?
Not a lot of difference. I mean, at the end of the day, it comes down to one simple issue. It's a public safety problem. Whether you are in favor of cannabis or not in favor of cannabis, it's here, it's regulated. We've adopted this transition of a policy from ban and imprison to a policy of tax and regulate. And if we are not going to be allowed to bank in this industry, then there's going to be cash everywhere. And I think that that's probably the greatest risk that comes out of this industry transitioning than the cannabis.
Is the cash.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big problem. It makes me very uncomfortable that I know what $1 million in cash looks like. I don't think anybody should know what $1 million in cash should look like.
Well, you can teach me. Well, let's start with cannabis farming. You know, will the money go to cannabis farming? And, you know, prohibition essentially gave the Emerald Triangle and other places across the land an economic food chain by which they could survive. You could hide the cannabis farms in the trees, and periodic busts kept the price way up. When I filmed this story for NBC Magazine way back when, cannabis was going for upwards of $4,000 a pound for the top quality cannabis. So that gave everybody a reason to grow cannabis, and pretty near everybody up there did. But legalization is, as John Downs was talking about, kind of migrating this industry into industrial settings like that in Monterey area. So who's going to make the money farming cannabis? John, let's start with you.
Well, he or she who are going to make the money farming cannabis will be those that can produce at the lowest cost. because what we've seen in our State of the Marijuana Markets research report that ArcView produces annually and has for the last 5 years, what we've seen in states such as Colorado, Washington, Oregon is price compression. And so inefficient operators, and oftentimes, you know, small size is a signal of inefficiency, you know, they will see their margin squeezed and will face those pricing pressures. And so that'll be a challenge to compete with those larger growers coming online.
Well, Gavin, I received an email from a John, I think it was John, up in Washington, who says he is a 502 grower up there, by which I assume he meant that he's some kind of a legal grower of cannabis up there. But what he said is that he can't make any money growing cannabis anymore because the price has fallen to the extent that it's just not worth his while to do it anymore. How low do you think the price of cannabis can go if we have giant or substantial production moving into greenhouses and out into the open?
Well, it's tough. That's, you know, how long's a bar fight? that's a tough question to answer. But it's you know, John's email is a distinct problem for, you know, a lot of people. It's a distinct problem for this industry. And I actually, if I can shift that question just a little bit, what I'm more concerned with it is it's the failure of this policy change, right? If people are not able to participate in this marketplace and are not able to make a living, to participating in this transition from a black market to a regulated market, then California's experiment here fails.
Why is
so
that?
Because people will not be able to participate. Only large operators will be able to participate. That's going to deteriorate the quality. It could affect the marketplace. You know, you see it a little bit in Washington already. I mean, I spend a lot of time in Washington, a little bit less time, but quite a bit in Colorado as well, and see how those markets are working out. And they're all sort of shaping up and figuring out their ways, but the boutique smaller farmer definitely has some challenges, and we've been trying to figure out ways. I think particularly, I'll just jump right to it, I think things like appellations are important for quality control in cannabis. Washington also has a little bit of a different situation in that they have primarily the indoor cultivation, which has a different set of costs issues relative to the production of cannabis. Also, California, though, is a massive consumer. And John will tell you, I believe the ArcView reports from a few years back, California consumed 48% of the entire nation's consumption of regulated cannabis. So it's
48%? One state consumes half the cannabis? John, would you elaborate on that?
Yeah, and he is quoting what we saw in the those that had been regulated medical markets and recreational markets. And so if you look at the size, for example, of Washington, Oregon, and Colorado, they fail to even reach the size of the market that we see in Southern California and Los Angeles and San Diego. So there's just, you know, tremendous population base here in California, nearly 40 million residents, you know, the size of Canada. So yeah, Gavin's number is correct. I mean, about half the consumption that we saw in the medical markets occur in California.
Wow. That surprises me that one state could consume half of the nation's supply. But we live in California, I guess there it is. Couple points to follow up on this. With respect to where cannabis is grown, Monterey, like Gavin says, Monterey County is really quite ideal for a number of reasons, not the least of which is a climate that makes it possible to grow cut flowers. But what happens, as I understand it, the rules are such that each county and each municipality is now cut free to compete against each other county and each other municipality for the production of cannabis. Am I wrong there? Gavin?
No, you're not wrong there, and I think that where Monterey County swings and whiffs is that the county has imposed a $15 square foot tax, which is imposed regardless of whether there's actually product produced or used. It's an authorized per square foot tax, and it's an example of confused policy. That's clearly a policy that's derived from sort of a prohibitionist fear of what this industry is going to be, and this perception that it's just, you know, endless cash machines in the background of our shop. But I'm going to tell you, and John, you know, you can pipe in on your perspective on it, but in my world in cannabis and where we are right now, I know very few operators, and I know a lot of operators, very few operators that are making adequate money right now. Most are struggling right now to meet the transition requirements of new softwares, building out their infrastructure. And so what John's group is doing is most important, which is bringing in much needed capital. The fact is there is an inadequate amount of capital for us to succeed presently to make this transition a success for California. And so I'm hoping that John's group and other groups like that will help bring in more capital into our industry so that we can build the greenhouses and we can hire security and we can have track and trace systems and on and on.
Okay, quick follow-up then before we go into the break. Monterey County is charging $15 per square foot greenhouse space. What happens when Kern and San Bernardino counties see all the money you folks are making in Monterey counties and elsewhere and go, let's compete. Let's make it real easy for cannabis farmers to grow thousands of acres. What then will happen to the price of cannabis in Monterey County and all the rest of the counties that are tightly regulating and looking for the taxes? Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, 831-47-1980. We're going to take some phone calls if you'd like to call in and tell us where you think the money will be in the legalization of cannabis. Right back.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, what's eating what is the money in the legalization of cannabis? Where will it be? Have you seen it? That's what we're looking for today. Before we took the break, we were talking a little bit about what happens when other counties in California, like Kern, like San Bernardino, counties that have a lot of space, a lot of hot temperature, got some water down there, can, you know, they can really get into the production of cannabis on a huge scale. And if you look at them and how they're looking at Monterey County that charges $15 a square foot for greenhouse space, John Downs, don't you think we're looking at quite a competitive environment shaping up here?
Well, absolutely. And money goes where it's treated best. And so for new capital coming in, when they look at the cost structures, taxation is a big part of that. And so if you are having high taxes in one area and low taxes in another, then, you know, naturally, all other things being equal, you're going to see businesses set up shop in a low-tax area. I mean, there's certainly, you know, a higher burden for companies that are already established in Monterey to go, say, from Monterey to a San Bernardino County. I mean, there's the switching costs, there's licensing fees, there's the real estate, the equipment, and on and on. Having said that, you know, if you're in Monterey County and you're competing in a higher tax environment with someone who is who's, you know, certainly has a better cost structure on account of paying lower taxes, that's very difficult to run a successful business. And this is one of the reasons why, you know, Gavin has said that he sees very few cannabis operators making adequate money, because right now they're all competing with this no tax environment, which is this you know, gray market that has existed since 96 and is still existing today and is being phased out, of course, with regulations that are going into effect here in the next couple of months. But for those that are, you know, trying to make that shift and taking on the burden of taxation and regulation, you know, they have competitors that are not. And it's created a very difficult environment, sadly, for those that are trying the hardest to do right.
Well, Gavin, you know, with respect to those who are trying to do right and getting all the licenses and paying all of the dues and whatnot, it is said that California now produces 12 times more cannabis than it consumes, and that the excess, of course, goes elsewhere. Now, if you are a legal grower, you cannot export to other states. That leaves open the market for black market growers who are growing and producing and shipping it to places where the prices will still be high, like New York City or Chicago or whatnot. Is that another built-in limitation to what we're going to be going through here?
I think that there's no doubt this is going to take some time. I mean, even with the taking down the prohibition of alcohol, you know, all those George Jones songs are about the tax and revenue man rolling the hills of Appalachia looking, you know, to snuff out that black market. And I think we're going to see the same thing in California. I mean, it's just, you know, it's one of the reasons that we push so hard to reduce taxes and to reduce the regulations to minimums and to scale up rather than to front load it, because what we're trying to do here is pretty simple. We're trying to incentivize people to leave the black market and come into a regulated market. And I think that sometimes the regulators and legislators and local governments lose sight of the overall goal here, which is to actually incentivize black market operators to leave the black market. And so, I think we're going to have a struggle here for the next couple of years. I absolutely expect Monterey County to eviscerate its tax to be competitive. I know the government's already talking about that. And to echo what John was saying, I think other communities are going to start to jockey. And it's going to come down to who can produce at the lowest, you know, the highest quality for the lowest cost, which is the same in any industry.
No difference in any industry, legal or not, I guess. And everybody wants the gold in the chest. Let's go quickly to the phones and talk to Adolfo, who has a question or a comment about marijuana politics. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead.
Can your guest enlighten me as to this company? It's a company, Grupo Flor.
Well, I think we have a guest who can enlighten you about Grupo Flor. Gavin Cogan. He is the founder of Grupo Flor.
Are they investors?
Gavin?
So Grupo Flor is not an investment group. Grupo Flor is really is founded by myself and four other folks that were commercial brokers. There's two lawyers and a couple of commercial brokers, and we started out with just leasing properties and trying to build out the structure of a supply chain.
Where do you get the money to do that?
That's a great question. So, the way we did that typically was that we would find a farm that was for lease, and then we would find operators that wanted to lease on that farm, and we would take some of the money that the subtenants would put down, and we'd carry that over as a deposit. And then, you know, we would get a number of subtenants who would share that property, and there'd be enough profit on there that the master, the owner of the company would, owner of the land makes considerably more money than what they were doing before, and we would make a profit.
Whereabouts is your office?
Well, all our properties are leased. Right,
check them. What's the website, Gavin? What's the website?
Yeah. Grupoflor.com. That's GRUPOFLOR.com.
And good luck, Adolfo.
I have a responsibility to tell you that there's a lot of money and people in Monterey County from the Tijuana cartel and the Sinaloa cartel. Both those people are very active here.
Ooh.
Yeah,
Gavin?
We're aware. Yeah,
are
we're
you
quite
aware
of those. Yes, we are. But about
okay,
my experience,
so what's
going
to happen when they come to tell you that they want to be business partners with you, which means they're going to take over everything and you're going to get nothing? What happens then?
That's a very, very good question. And, I'll tell you, my experience is that organized crime typically does not migrate towards businesses that have to pay workers' compensation insurance premiums.
Thanks okay. for the call, Adolfo. Really appreciate it.
I got to get a hold of you guys because this is really funny. This is all. You could almost write a comedy down in Hollywood about this, but they have other issues going
yeah,
on
they
right
do.
Now.
Well, you know, just a sec before you leave, Adolfo, let's go to John Downs, who does have an investment firm in cannabis, and you do help people with money find investments in cannabis, right, John?
Does this person know what IGG means? Has anybody explained that to him, IGG, in reference to banking laws?
John?
I'm not familiar with IGG. Would you be so kind as to enlighten me?
Sure. Let me enlighten you. When you take drug money from previous drug dealings and put it in a bank, that's called money laundering, and you can only money launder if it's ill-gotten gain. You're dealing with ill-gotten gain from people who got the money with dirty hands. Okay, this is just absolutely ridiculous.
Well,
you people could get involved in this as far as you have and not even understand any of this.
Well,
I wouldn't touch this with a 1,000-foot pole because these guys play for keeps. And I haven't even talked about motorcycle gangs yet and any of these other people.
Well, thank you for the call, Adolfo. And I guess that's something we should pick up when we come back from this coming break. What about the illegal money that wants to transition into legal money with legalization of cannabis? I hadn't thought of that. Not being in the cartel business myself, but I guess a lot of people are, and they do have a lot of cash, and there is a lot of cartel activity in the Emerald Triangle of California. So, oh goodness, when we come back, where is the money going to be when the legalization of cannabis takes place? Just a couple of weeks. Wow.
History buffs, this tale from Michael Olson's Tales from a Tin Can took place aboard the USS Dale at Guam, 15 August, 1945.
When word came through that the war had ended, everyone went wild. We made noise with whatever we could get our hands on. Sirens shrieked, bells rang, horns bellowed, sailors whooped and hollered. I was the wildest of all because when I first went in the Navy, I read you had to do everything you could to keep your head and nerves together so you could survive to the end. Well, I held myself together almost 4 years aboard that tin can, and I made it through to the end. Yes, I celebrated. I whooped and I hollered and I banged on metal. You bet I did. And I celebrated a bunch for all those guys that couldn't, too.
Tales from a Tin Can contains 424 tales by 44 sailors aboard the USS Dale, from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay. Order your Father's Day copy at talesfromatincan.com. That's talesfromatincan.com. talesfromatincan.com.
And now, more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, Adolfo brought up a pretty interesting point. I guess we should figure it out. The illegal money that wants to become legal money by investing in greenhouses and cannabis plantations in the soon-to-be-legal state of California. John Downs, you are in the business of taking people's money and investing in that cannabis industry. Do you run across cartel money? And if so, how do you manage that?
Well, no, I don't run across cartel money. And I think that, you know, any criminal looking to launder their funds will probably pick a lot better, easier way to do so than to participate in a licensed cannabis business. So I think that, you know, there's a misperception that's spread by folks with prohibitionist tendencies that, you know, by participation in the industry, you're a criminal or you're immediately associating with criminals. I mean, my experience has been most often, you know, we're not seeing the cartels. We're not seeing, you know, big groups. Rather, it's folks that are just individuals, have a bent towards freedom, you know, have understood for whatever reason, maybe culturally exposed to it, you know, from hippie parents, you know, earlier than most, but understand the healing power potential of the plant. And so they want to participate. They want to see this industry in the light of day. And I think, you know, by continuing to regulate and continuing to normalize and destigmatize cannabis, we actually do quite a bit, more than we could ever do fighting cartels vis-a-vis the drug war. We do quite a bit in you know, limiting their gains and their ability to compete. And I think that, you know, if you look at cartels anecdotally, I think along the border, you know, we've seen cannabis shipments and trafficking decline. There's just not a lot of money in cannabis. The stuff that they're growing down in Central and South America isn't of the quality of what you would see in one of the greenhouses that Gavin is leasing out to his growers to start, to say nothing of you know, again, the potential for so much, you know, great craft cannabis that we see, you know, up and down California. You know, cartels have difficulty, you know, competing with that. And so I think that, you know, in contrast to, you know, in contrast to what we kind of see talked about in some of these fears, you know, we're actually doing more to combat cartels by legalizing and normalizing cannabis than we could by saying, let's restrict this, keep this as limited as possible, and create the conditions for the black market to exist and be incentivized.
It seems from listening to the both of you that the legalization of cannabis is going to be almost as problematic as the prohibition of cannabis. Am I wrong, Gavin?
No, I think that, it's a different set of problems, you know, but it's similar to, you know, to trail off of, what John was saying. If you look at the end of, you know, Ken Burns did an amazing prohibition documentary. I don't know if you had a chance to see it, but it's really interesting to see what happens to the culture after prohibition ends. And, you know, one of the main arguments to end prohibition was organized crime. And there was this argument, well, organized crime then is just going to be in the regulated alcohol industry afterwards. And you know, the fact is that regulated alcohol just is not inviting. And the cost, the taxes, the fact that literally every plant is tracked from the beginning of its being, from being a clone to being produced, harvested, to being put into oil if it's going to be rendered into that form, to be put into a product. I mean, with GPS following it, it's just really not a, it's so much easier to go produce an illegal substance in a trailer somewhere and sell that than it is to produce, you know, a whole acre of cannabis.
Well, Steve,
go through the process. It's just clumsy, and I know people are concerned about it, but there's a tremendous amount of legacy of drug war propaganda that we're chewing through here, and it's a process. It's going to take some time.
Well, Steve has a comment that just might throw a monkey wrench into the whole process. Steve, welcome to the Food Chain. Go ahead.
Hey, well, you know, one thing I love about you, MZ, is you...
I'm not MZ. Excuse me. Excuse me. I'm Michael Olson.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just got on the program.
That's okay.
Mr.
Good.
Olson, I apologize. It's the fact, just grow your own. One year you might have to, go to the place, but you can grow your CBCs if you've got, like, seizure problems or you've got a relative that has cancer and all this stuff. You don't have to go through these cartels. If it's legal, unless you have bad neighbors that'll steal your plants, grow a couple plants in your backyard. Just, you know what I mean? You might have to go one season. If you know what you're doing, you can grow a plant with like 2 or 3 pounds easy. If you really know what you're doing, you can grow like 4 or 5 pounds trimmed. You don't have to go through a cartel or any of those knuckleheads. Grow your own.
Well, there you go. That's an excellent point, Steve. And with respect to that, I think it's the law in California is that you can grow 6 plants of your own. And if they're four pounds apiece, that's enough, you know, high quality cannabis to keep the whole neighborhood going for a year. What happens then, Gavin?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a vital suggestion. One of the things that I love, and I know my co-speaker loves about cannabis is that, you know, it is sort of a do-it-yourself type of thing, and California embraces that, and I think that there's going to be a tremendous market for supplies and support for people who want to go it alone and grow their 6 plants. But one of the things that I've noticed also in this industry in its evolution is that, so when I kind of first got deeply involved in it about 2011, 2012, consumer packaged goods, I mean, edibles and concentrates were, you know, less than 3% of the marketplace. My God, today it's 45% of the products sold are consumer packaged goods.
Is that where the big money's going to be, Gavin?
Oh, we're going to keep that a secret.
Okay, folks, when we come back, I'm going to ask the big question. Will all the money go to taxes? This is the Food Chain Radio program. Right back. You stay tuned.
Here's a little secret I'm telling you. Take a little pledge called the 2x2. Spend $2 on local food each day and get 2 friends to do the same and play. Oh, they'll spend their money, and when they're through, they'll get 2 friends and do it too.
We can eat our way to economic security and personal freedom. It won't cost an extra dime, and it will be so easy, it will make you blush. All it takes is 2 numbers. One is 2, the other is 2-2. Join us. Take the 2x2 pledge.
There's a little secret I shared with you, a simple pledge called the 2x2. You can do it. It don't cost much. It's so easy, it'll make you blush. Pledge 2 local bucks each day. Get 2 others to pledge and play.
Take your 2x2 pledge at metrofarm.com.
2x2.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
And Gavin Kogan, Group of Floor, and John Downs from ArcView Group. Gentlemen, producer Sarah Bell just brought up an interesting point. She said, here in California, the state just raised the taxes 12 cents a gallon on all the gasoline that we use. And you look at how the state has spent itself into the ground and has this mountain of unfunded liabilities, as do the county governments, as do the city governments. It seems to me that these governments, all of them, are looking at cannabis and going, oh boy, are we going to make a lot of money. And so here in the last few minutes, we just got to ask, is there going to be any money left for anybody else in this business? John, let's start with you.
Well, taxes are certainly my largest fear. Taxes and regulation causing, putting a regulatory structure that makes it uneconomical to run a business that can compete with the alternatives. Alternatives such as growing your own, or, again, we know that we've had traditionally, historically, a very vibrant, large black market for cannabis because there is significant demand. And so while we see, in particular, plant-touching enterprises struggling with federal tax issues, IRS 280E, and we anticipate there being additional difficulty with state tax regimes taking effect. And, certainly the, if you look at the start to finish, seed all the way through to production and excise tax on sale, there's a significant tax burden for cannabis businesses. So it's certainly a concern, but we think, there's also a significant opportunity, and we shouldn't look past that.
Where is it, John? Where is that? Where is the opportunity?
I think one example that Gavin mentioned and I agree with is manufactured goods, and not just the manufacturers of the goods themselves, but the intellectual property, the branding that's going on that packaging. And we really think there's a tremendous opportunity in IP and in brands. And what we've seen in other states is that as the price of cannabis is compressed and margins are squeezed, those brands that have a presence in consumers' minds that are recognizable, that stand out on the shelves, that's how you can maintain pricing power, is with effective branding. And so I think there's a tremendous opportunity for entrepreneurs coming into the space, to think, what is that next great cannabis brand? We know who the Coca-Cola of cannabis is today. I don't think so. So I think therein lies, one opportunity.
Gavin, do you have any other opportunities you see?
Well, yeah, I think that it's an entire industry. I mean, soup to nuts. I think anybody who starts to look into a particular area in this industry will find ample opportunities to exploit. It is that's what's so exciting about it. And I trust that's also, why we're both on here, is that what excites me the most about this industry is that we get to create this thing entirely from scratch. It's not already preordained what it's going to be or even who the consumers are. We don't know a lot of what we're doing. We get to create all this from scratch, and that's very exciting for creative, energetic, bright people. Being attractive.
Gavin, isn't that what always made illegal cannabis so much fun? It was the fact that it was more exciting than growing rutabagas?
maybe. I don't know. It's interesting. I grew up in California. I grew up specifically as a kid.
Gentlemen, we just ran out of time, but I want to thank both of you so much. John Downs from the ArcView Group, Gavin Kogan, founder of Grupo Flor. Holy smokes, what a brave new world we're going into now. Thank you all for tuning in.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.